The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into another off-season check-in here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann, once again, joined by Phil Bush. And Phil may sound a little different this week, may have some technical issues, but I think we're going to get through it. Phil, how's the off-season?
Well, considering the audio quality is going to be less than ideal, somewhat normal for the off-season, just as...
just working out the kinks, I guess.
Yeah, we're getting into game shape.
Yeah, this is a podcast we were, like, planning on doing for, like, 2 or 3 weeks, and then I was out of town 1 week, and Phil had a thing going on the next week, and then one night we're both too tired and didn't feel like doing it, so we kept pushing it back. So we finally found time on Monday night to record this podcast, and we're going to talk about Phil's tour of the Fiserv Forum, which looked really nice, but I thought we'd start with some recruiting notes, and I know everyone is kind of buzzing about Nico Mannion right now. We're going to get to Nico in a minute. But, Phil, I thought we would start with the guy who just recently committed to Marquette, and that's Dexter Acano, who is going to be in New Jersey this year. He's from Valencia, California. He's a 6'4 combo guard. And I can definitely say this without embarrassment. When he committed, I had never heard of the guy. I mean, this was definitely an off-the-radar commitment for Marquette.
Well, I don't think anyone had heard of him because 247 Sports, none of the major recruiting services seem to have a page on him. So, it's seemingly on the surface a rather deep pull by Wojo.
I was trying to do a little research on him, and I came across something. I actually tweeted it out. If you go to my Twitter page from Monday night, you'll find the link, but maybe I'll repop it in the morning. But Dexter is, like I said, he's from Valencia, California, and back in January, he entered, I guess it was a contest with Steve Nash was giving out one-hour coaching sessions. You had to, like, enter on his Instagram page, and if you were between certain ages, like if you were either grade school or high school age, you could submit a letter to Steve and say why you would like some training with Steve Nash and what you'd want to get out of it. And the video I found actually was Nash reading Dexter's submission, and Dexter ended up actually winning a one-hour coaching session from Steve Nash. So the second video is actually the session with Steve Nash. So he got a one-hour coaching session with a basketball Hall of Famer, so that's kind of cool. But it was just kind of cool to hear Dexter's voice and maybe kind of hear some of his dreams of basketball. He came off as a really smart kid with some, you know, big dreams, but, like, good vision of where he wants to be and what he wants to be as a basketball player. So I think Anonymous Eagle wrote in his article this week that he was being recruited by Ivy League schools as well, so he's obviously a smart kid. I guess he's doing the post-grad year for physical development as a basketball player. He's not in any academic trouble, I would assume, if he's looking at Ivy League schools. But you know, it was just interesting to me to see those videos and just learn a little bit about him. What little I can find, Phil, is he's a, like I said, a 6'4", 200-pound guard. Looks to be pretty well put together, and I guess he has a reputation as a very good defender. Didn't have many offers besides Marquette. Virginia Tech and New Mexico was about it. So, hey, they beat Buzz for a recruit, so there's that. But, yeah, so I just take it as just this is a nice addition for some depth and maybe a guy who can maybe help the defense down the road too.
Yeah, well, this is the way I look at it is this is Buzz has – or Buzz, jeez. Boy, man, that's a terrible –
That's an off-season mistake.
Yeah. We'll get that cleaned up, and I'll have to run some suicides as a result. I think this is Wojo really kind of deciding that that the roster composition for next season, at a minimum, is pretty good, and he can take a bit of a flyer on somebody that maybe doesn't help them immediately, but kind of builds for the future, right? I think Dexter is the kind of player that, hey, he's going to develop. He's got height, right? He's a long guard, and clearly we don't want to have another scenario where we're playing two sub-6 footers. But I think this is really Wojo saying, hey, listen, we don't got a lot of minutes next season. Let's bring somebody in that can develop, maybe grow a little bit and fill some gaps when they're, you know, at a minimum a junior or a senior. So I think it's kind of a reload type of thing.
Yeah, I think with regards to recruiting rankings, I guarantee the next time these sites refresh their recruiting rankings, they'll be like, "Oh, he's a Marquette commit. All right, fine, 3 stars." And like, so he'll be on the radars now that he's gotten, you know, high major offers and is committed to a high major program. So that was cool to have him on board. So that's one tick in the recruiting in the column. But the thing that I think a lot of people are buzzing about, those who follow recruiting, and if you don't, this may be news to you, but I think most people are at least vaguely aware that Nico Mannion, who is a 5-star guard who was in the 2020 class, he reclassified to the 2019 class, meaning so he is now playing his last year of high school basketball, had Marquette in his final four, and now suddenly Marquette is in his final two. Phil, when we were originally planning to do this podcast, like 2 weeks ago, you know, I was planning on coming at the Mannion recruitment with the same apprehension, maybe is the word, that I had with the Quentin Grimes recruitment, right? Like, really never thought Marquette would get Quentin Grimes as long as Kansas was involved. You know, it's nice that they're in the mix, but I never really thought that was actually going to happen. And I really was approaching Mannion the same way, but with Villanova and Duke now out, I can't look at this at anything but 50-50 between Marquette and Arizona.
Well, and Marquette gets first crack. He's going to be at Marquette Madness, head of whatever Arizona's drop the bag ceremony is going to be. So, you know, you got to feel good.
Yeah, you do have to feel pretty good about this one. And, you know, just a little more about Nico for those who don't know. It's like, well, how is this kid from Phoenix, Arizona this closely tied to Marquette? Well, number one, Stan. Stan has been busting it. I mean, the whole staff, really. But if Stan Johnson, he was tweeting from Phoenix, Arizona on Monday. So I could only assume he was on the recruiting trail. But, you know, the staff has worked really hard to build this relationship over the years. But it really goes back before that. You know, when they were recruiting Brendan Bailey, Bailey and Mannion's family are very close. I think we may have even mentioned this on the last podcast, but it's probably pretty common knowledge now that Bailey's family and Mannion's family are close because their dads, but were both with the Utah Jazz. You know, Thurl Bailey, who played with the Utah Jazz, and Mannion's dad, who played professionally, was with the Jazz broadcast team. So they're pretty close. Mannion knows Marcus Howard as well, who's also, of course, from Arizona. So I think they may have matched up in summer ball at some point. So, or maybe even know some of the same trainers. So there are a lot of relationships that tie Mannion to Marquette. And of course, you know, Arizona's the home school, so of course it makes sense that Arizona's in the mix. But to me, Phil, like, the take I was planning to make coming into this podcast before Duke was eliminated, that you shouldn't get excited about Mannion to Marquette until Duke is out. And you would need Duke to get Cole Anthony, who is the number one point guard in the class. That's what I was going to say. Say, all right, until Duke gets their point guard in thereafter Cole Anthony, who's the top guy, then maybe you could get excited. But the fact that he eliminated Duke, while Duke currently has no 2019 commits, that was just kind of surprising to me. Because, you know, just the way Duke has been over the last few years, they always got their guy. I mean, they got the top three guys in last year's class, plus Trey Jones, who was a top 10 guy. So it seemed like Duke was getting literally anyone, and maybe that was more Jeff Capel than anything. But with Duke and Nova both in the mix, I thought, well, you know, it's nice Marquette's in the Final Four, but I'm just not sure that's going to happen. But now that the two power programs are out, and, you know, Arizona is a power program too, of course, but I just, like, now I'm talking to myself in the that this is actually a really realistic thing that could happen. And you look at, if the roster holds as is projected, almost everyone coming back and adding a 5-star guard to just slide right in there next to Marcus Howard, that is really, really intriguing for next year.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, we can talk about the next year here in a minute, but part of the question I have is, you know, you mentioned Duke and Duke gets their guy. So it makes me question what is Nico looking for, right? Like, if you're trying to read between the lines or read the tea leaves, like, if he's going to eliminate a team like Duke, I mean, Arizona is local, but that's about the limit of kind of the connections he really, really has there, right? You know, so I mean, where are you putting your level of optimism on Nico to MU?
I don't – it's tough to say because I'm sure Arizona has been on him for a long time as well. I mean, just the fact that he's in the area, I'm sure, you know, they've at least maybe not been recruiting him, but at least been familiar with him since he was in grade school, you know, like known who he was, you know, before he got to high school. And I'm sure they maybe offered him – I don't know when they may have offered him a long time ago. But I honestly, I have it right at 50-50. I'm not going to say Marquette's the favorite because I think that's getting a little too optimistic, but I wouldn't say Marquette is way behind Arizona either. Now, granted, I haven't met Nico myself. I haven't interviewed him, but I just kind of read the tea leaves. You know, you ask what is he looking for, and I think kind of what you were going for there is like the relationships part seemed to be more important than, you know, let's build a super team and, you know, just go to Duke or Kentucky and win a national championship and then I'll go to the NBA. It seems like he's looking for a little bit closer relationship with the coaches, and Marquette has been doing that for a long time, as has Arizona, I'm sure. And you know, Arizona, even though I think Arizona's probably going to be down this year, you know, you can make your FBI jokes if you want, but you know, Sean Miller has a great reputation as a recruiter. He puts guys in the NBA. He probably has the label of best coach not to go to a Final Four, best active coach not to go to a Final Four. I mean, he's probably on the short list maybe with Chris Mack in that regard. So, I mean, there's certainly a lot to like about Arizona, and it certainly would not shock me if Marquette lost to Arizona at the end here. But, yeah, Marquette's got a great shot. Like I said, 50-50. I'm not going to call him the favorite, but I don't think they are chasing Arizona at this point either.
Well, I mean, I kind of look at it. I do put, and it's not a joke for purposes of a joke, but, I mean, that FBI thing has to, at some point, enter into, like, the decision, right? Like, I mean, that's certainly,
it's certainly
not a positive.
Not a positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Boy, that was a bit of a jinx there. Thanks. All right. But that is absolutely. That's definitely one check in the Marquette column, is Marquette is not under investigation for anything.
Right. Well, except for a brief flirtation with some former player.
Somebody
sold
may
some
have
shoes.
Sold some shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we got past that.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Exactly. But, you know, so. I don't know. I guess as ever the optimistic, I think it's better than 50-50, but who knows? I mean, it's really going to come down to, does he come away really impressed with the team for next year? Because, you know, like you said, Arizona might be down this year, but they'll be back. They'll recruit again. But with everyone,
absolutely.
I mean, with everyone coming back, and this segues into kind of the next year talk, with everyone from Marquette coming back, if you add Nico, is it fair to say expectations are Final Four?
That seems crazy high, but I mean, if you're not going to put your expectations high for that team, I don't know what you're waiting for. Like, I don't know how it's going to get that much better than that. If, like, again, like you said, if everyone comes back, if this team is as good as we hope it is, the current team, the 18-19 team, and then you bring everybody back, including Howard and both Housers, and you get another year of development out of the younger guys we saw last year, and Elliot and Kane and John. Yeah, I mean, but I want to see how good this team is year first before I want to start talking about something crazy the following year. But you would think the combination of talent and experience that the 19-20 team would have is what you would typically look for in a Final Four contender. You know, that sounds crazy. Let's say Big East championship contender first. Like, that's the kind of, like, a team that you would regularly find in the top 10 throughout the season, right? A team that has a lot of talent, NBA, maybe not NBA, well, some of them may be NBA talent, but pro-level talent and experience. Because I think the experience thing matters, especially in leagues like the Big East, where a lot of, you know, teams have four-year players where they're not, like, just cranking out their best one-and-dones, like, say, in the Big 12 where you've got Kansas, like, mostly cycling one-and-dones in and out, and Kentucky doing that in the SEC, and Duke, and maybe at times Carolina in the ACC, so, and Arizona in the Pac-12. So, like, I think the best programs in the Big East, like Xavier and Villanova the last few years, largely have been built behind 3- and 4-year guys. So, like, I think the experience Marquette would have next year, yeah, would have to be a huge positive. And then, you add a 5-star talent, Nico Mannion, who would probably be an NBA player down the road. Yeah, you would have to put the expectations crazy high. But again, I want to see exactly how good this 18-19 team is first before I get too crazy about next year. But yeah, there's plenty of reason for excitement. I'm not even going to temper it down and say, no, maybe they'll make the tournament and that'll be good enough. No, that's not good enough. Like, if you bring back that team, that you've got to put the expectations higher than, well, I hope we make the tournament. It's got to be higher than that. So yeah, that's kind of where that's why I think everyone's excited about the possibility of Mannion coming on board. And like I said, I would put it 50-50 between Marquette and Arizona. And yeah, Matt Mannion is an interesting prospect. Did you know, Phil, his high school teammate is the best quarterback in the country? Basically, I was asking. Maybe I was mostly asking the audience, but yeah, one of his high school teammates is Spencer Rattler, who actually was on our show, Sports Stars of Tomorrow, the thing I produce this past week. So if you actually see that Spencer Rattler video that I tweeted out on Monday, if you watch the basketball highlights of him, you would definitely see Nico Mannion in there. But yeah, those two are very close. But that's just a fun fact that one of the just a public school in Arizona has one of the highest rated basketball players and one of the highest rated football players in the country. I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, keep an eye on Mannion. Again, he's going to be at Marquette Madness on October 5th. The thing is, not to totally overlook this kid, James Bishop is also going to be there. That's another guy Marquette is recruiting. And I'd be interested to be a fly on the wall during that recruitment, Phil. Like, I mean, how the staff is playing. Because obviously everyone's excited about Mannion, right? Like, when I say everyone, I mean the fans and everyone. But, you know, Bishop is a guy they're high on. And I'm sure a guy they would love to have. He's a four-star guard. He's very talented. You know, I wouldn't go so far as to say he's like a plan B or anything. I mean, I know Marquette would love to have him. But I don't know if I see Marquette signing Mannion and Bishop. I'm not, because then they'd be one over, and I don't know if they need two combo guards on top of adding Dexter Akano already. But I mean, he's another guy who's going to be there, and he's already visited LSU. He's visited St. John. He will visit St. John's and VCU before he visits Marquette. Now, Seton Hall and Colorado are also in his top six. So that's another guy Marquette is in solid position for. So don't forget about James Bishop. When it comes to filling that last Marquette scholarship, but obviously all eyes are on Mannion, with all due respect to Bishop, who, again, who is a fine player, would be a nice addition to Marquette's roster. When you're talking about a potential All-American, McDonald's All-American, you can't help but get excited about the possibility of adding a talent like that.
Yeah, well, and I think it's basically, you're right not to call Bishop a plan B per se, but I think it's basically, it is, there's no doubt about it, is Mannion's scholarship to take or not take, right? And Mannion's going to project to a point guard as a point guard in the NBA, so might as well start at Marquette, hopefully, where the only other true point guard, because I will argue till I'm blue in the face that Marcus is an off guard. He's not a point guard. The only one that'll be on the roster in 2019 is Kobe McEwen, because Joseph Chartouni is only going to be here 1 year. So, right. You know, and so that's the other thing that makes that role attractive, right? We've got a ton of depth. We've got definitely an opportunity for a starting or heavy rotation point guard type in 2019. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's gonna come down to, like I said, how well he likes the school. You can ask Marcus the transition from Arizona to Wisconsin, especially in November, December, January, February, March, April, and May, is difficult.
I'm sure Marcus could give him some tips on where to buy a coach.
Where to buy six of them.
Yeah. Because I think Marcus said he didn't even, like, have a winter coat until he committed to Marquette, which makes sense. But, yeah, those two guys are both on the schedule, and I think Marquette's going to try like hell to get Nico in the Al McGuire Center and just lock the doors and say, look, let's get this commitment, then we'll let you go. But I think he still has his Arizona official visit scheduled for later in October, and I think he has another unofficial visit scheduled. For also in October in Arizona, just because it's right there. But, you know, with the new recruiting rules, he can take 15 official visits. So if Marquette wants to bring him back for a second official visit, maybe bring him back for the Kansas State game, the Wisconsin game, something like that, maybe they can do that. You can use multiple official visits on one kid, I guess. So
yeah,
keep an eye on those two guys. But Seth Lundy and Rocket Watts, Marquette's both in their top 10, but I'm not sure how close they are in either one of those guys if you want to throw out a couple more names. But obviously the big names right now are Mannion and Bishop, who will be at Marquette Madness.
And to give give you a bit of a segue, we have a shining crown jewel of a stadium that we can show Nico around a little bit.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask you, Phil, is like one of the big selling points for these guys on that official visit is now they can take them around the Fiserv Forum, which is now open. And I know many of you out there got to tour it on the Marquette Open House. I know, Phil, you are one of them. So I'm going to kind of hand it over to you here and just the best you can in a podcast, tell me what you saw for those of us who aren't able to be there and have only just looked at pictures on Twitter and Facebook. What are we missing in the Fiserv Forum? Why should we, those of us who are out of state, plan to make a trip, those of us who are in the city who missed the open house, why should we buy some tickets and make sure we go to a game this year?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that it is probably the best. It is the best NBA arena in the NBA right now, but that's kind of like saying Aaron Rodgers is the highest paid quarterback in the NFL right now. Eventually it will be eclipsed. But the difference, I mean, the Bradley Center, no disrespect to the soon to be destroyed, but it had its purpose. I have fond memories, but the difference between the Bradley Center and the Fiserv Forum is just night and day in terms of just fan experience. Granted, we didn't see an actual game being played and what the crowd noise is. But it's just an outstanding arena, to great views everywhere. It'll be interesting because the way the stadium is set up, the lower bowl, they actually put more seats in the lower bowl than the Bradley Center. And the way they built it, there aren't bad seats, but the way they built it, you are definitely incentivized to be in the lower bowl. As most people listen to this podcast know, I have season tickets to Marquette games. And, we have traditionally sat up in the upper bowl of the Bradley Center, fourth, fifth row, center court of the upper bowl. And those are great seats, good to get in and out. And we had similar seats plotted for or had to purchase them for the Fiserv Forum. And then went to the open house. We were second row, center court, on the home bench side. And just and I'm not putting down, but the upper deck, it's so steep getting to the seats, and the logistics getting up to the upper bowl are somewhat difficult, especially with a young no red for Owen. We actually upgraded to lower bowl seats, moved down into a corner. We're actually on where the student or where the team comes out. We're right by the tunnel, and everything about the lower bowl is set up so that fans are focused on the court. And I think it's actually similar to what they did with Seattle. I think they kind of have the acoustics and all the speakers and all that stuff centered to create just this very loud experience, which I think will be energizing for the team.
Yeah. Now, this arena was built for basketball.
Correct.
Like the Bradley Center, which was built for hockey.
Right.
And, was made to also accommodate a basketball team. But so you get that sense that, okay, this is a basketball arena as opposed to the Bradley Center, which was more multi-purpose.
Absolutely. So, like I said, we're sitting in the corners in the lower bowl now. And the Bradley Center, those were the worst seats, because you were so far away from the court. Where our seats are now, and we're certainly not high rent district. It's probably 30 feet to the sideline, right by the home bench. So it's a tremendous view, and it's focused. Everything is vertical, so that you can get as close to the court as possible. And then the where you enter, everything you enter at the level and go down to the seats, whether you're on the upper deck or the lower deck. But the main deck where you get to the lower bowl, it's also kind of an open feel. So where if you're at concessions, you can easily see what's going on in the game. So you know, it's not one of these like, all right, I got to sprint and I got to get some food and a beer in the next 2 minutes, otherwise I'm going to miss court action. You can it's not unrealistic to be able to watch the game while you're in line at concessions. They also have 890 TVs.
I did see that number. That was just mind-blowing. But, yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask you was about the open concourses, which are definitely the trend in all the new basketball arenas, all the new indoor arenas, is being able to see the game action from no matter where, from the concourse. So, like, if you're standing in line, like, I know the Sprint Center in Kansas City is that way. And I remember when I went down there, I was like, man, this is great. I can just stand in line. I can still watch the game. Yeah. And so I'm glad they did that at the Fiserv Forum. So, but yeah, I mean, it certainly sounds like an awesome arena. And, you know, if you have a subscription to The Athletic, there was a pretty good article from Brian Hamilton who kind of sat down with Wojo and talked about the arena and how much he loved it. I don't know if you caught that, Phil.
Yeah, I did.
You know, it was kind of, you know, it was a nice article and, you know, obviously, for good reasons, Wojo is plenty excited for this arena, and just sounds like it is just going to be state of the art, first class, and they just can't wait to show it off.
Yeah, it's really going to be a major recruiting tool because, I mean, even when you go into the locker rooms, and the article touched on it a little bit, the professionalism of the locker rooms and the experiences and the amenities are just tremendous. I mean, you are playing in an NBA dedicated arena. There are very few college teams in the country that can say that. I mean, heck, Villanova can only claim to partially play in an NBA arena. You know, they only play a third of their games at the Wachovia Center or whatever it is, or the Pavilion, whichever one is the NBA region, NBA arena.
It's Wells Fargo, right?
Oh yeah, you're right. Wells Fargo. Yeah, Wachovia is the on-campus arena.
Right.
But anyway, so there's very few teams that can claim, you know, an NBA arena, and just the game experience is going to be tremendous. And I think what you're going to see, especially in year one, where in years past you would, you know, you'd get, you know, the advertised attendance is 11,000 and you'd be lucky to count, you know, 2,000 people in the seats, just from the game experience, the desire to be the arena. I think you're going to see even the Sisters of the Poor and Legless non-conference games be fairly well attended.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if you've got tickets to this arena this year, I mean, you definitely want to get there and see it, as long as the on-court product is good, which I think it should be.
Right.
There's no reason to not, you know, take advantage of those tickets to fill the place up. And I think the important thing is, I think now capacity is a little smaller than Bradley Center. Like, it's down to like 17,000.
Yeah, it's about 1,000 less. Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, it's a rare occasion that Marquette actually got 18,000. But I think the good news is for like some of those non-conference games when maybe you only get actually 10,000 people in the building and maybe the upper bowl is kind of empty, it probably still won't feel empty as if you have that many people in the lower bowl, right?
Right.
If you don't have so many people scattered up top where you just have like just so many more people in the lower bowl, it should still feel full and loud for some of those maybe less than intriguing matchups in the non-conference.
Yeah, well, and I'm also hearing rumors of, because again, it's a relatively technological arena. I have heard that for some of those lesser attended games, and they did it a little bit at the Bradley Center, but they're really going to go all in on apps, one of which is to you can actually in-game upgrade, right? So the goal would be to move you down for a relatively small price, move you down from the upper bowl to the lower bowl if tickets are available or people aren't there or whatever. So I think they're going to do. And the entertainment value, I mean the video boards are friggin' amazing. It's like 4K television. I mean, I know you got Jerry World down there in Dallas, and I'm not saying it gives it the run for money in size, but just the fidelity of the televisions and the arena screens and they were playing a little bit with the entertainment system. Some of the things, the in-game entertainment and the pre-game stuff, should be kind of mind-boggling. So I think it's going to be just a whole new, brand new experience for Marquette fans. So get to games.
Yeah, it would be physically impossible to have an arena screen as big as the one at Jerry World inside a basketball arena. But what the cool thing I saw, and I don't know if I can describe this well in a podcast, but obviously there are screens that face the fans, but like the inside of the screens, it looks like they're tilted and like facing down. So like if you're on the court, you could like see up, if that makes sense. Am I describing
that? Yes, you're correct. Yep.
Yeah, so like those low angle shots, like from under the basket, like you'll pretty clearly see the board from up there. And so like if the players are on the court and they want to see a replay and they want to look up, they can see it very easily from the court, where in the past they maybe have to really kind of look up and they're seeing it at a really sharp angle and maybe couldn't really see in most traditional basketball arenas with the way the scoreboards are. But it looks like the way the video boards are now, like I said, there's an outside and an inside, and the inside is like tilted down, so if you're court level, you can see up, like especially for people who are maybe sitting front row, right?
Right.
Or people who have those really premium seats, they can clearly see video replays and stuff up there. So I think that should be make for a great, just great game day experience, great arena experience. So I'm excited to see how it comes off on television, and yeah, I'm going to have to find a way to get up there myself sooner rather than later. So it looks pretty cool. So I'm excited for Marquette. And if you haven't read that article on The Athletic, be sure to check it out. It's a pretty good look. A nice interview with Wojo about the arena. So
yeah, well, and the other thing about the scoreboard that's really nice is if you think of it as a four-sided clock, the four faces, like in the Bradley Center, you kind of had fixed real estate that was taken up by, you know, player positions and the clock and stuff that you couldn't do anything with other than the express purpose what it is. The entire scoreboard is essentially a giant TV screen on four sides, so you can literally put content wherever. You can reconfigure and reorganize the content on those screens for whatever you want to do.
So like in the, when you're doing Name That Tune or whatever, you can like turn off the scoreboard for, you know,
exactly,
take away the stats for a minute and just make a nice video presentation with what's up there. So yeah, that's a good point. So yeah, the old school video board where you just have to have some things up there all the time, that's gone. So I think that's cool, and I think it should make for a pretty good game day experience. Why don't we wrap up today? Maybe a relatively short podcast, but that's fine for the off season. Maybe just some schedule notes. And the most notable thing since the last time we recorded, Phil, is that it is official now that we know the matchup for the preseason NIT. And Marquette is playing the Kansas Jayhawks, who will probably begin the season at number one or number two in most preseason polls. So that is a monster addition to the schedule.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you were advocating for Marquette to put together a tough non-conference schedule, they've done that.
Yeah, with a little help from the NIT selection committee. But yeah, so I mean, even if you go to New York, you know, go to Brooklyn and just get, you know, boat raced by Kansas, you know, it's fine, really. You know, you're not going to win all your games, and then, you know, if you can come out with a win against Louisville or Tennessee, that's great. But, you know, if you can upset Kansas, then, you know, you'll be in fantastic shape with regards to your preseason resume. Like, what I'm trying to say is there's no downside to playing Kansas. To, you know, just, you know, obviously you wouldn't want to do it, play Kansas and Duke and Kentucky and Michigan State, but, you know, to play one top five team in the non-con is great to me. And, you know, Tennessee is actually a top three team. So, you know, they could potentially play two of them, depending on how that shakes out. But, yeah, I'm really excited to see them play Kansas because, you know, I think for me, from what I know about the teams in the preseason, I think Kansas and Kentucky are the two best teams right now because they've got the best mix of youth, talent, and experience coming back. So Kansas, you know, I know they lost. I mean, obviously they lost Graham and some good guards to the pros, but you know they bring back a lot of other guys. The brothers from Memphis, Lawson brothers. That's who I'm trying to think of. Dedrick and KJ Lawson. They're eligible this year. Obviously Quentin Grimes, who we mentioned at the top of the podcast, who would have been nice if he was Marquette Golden Eagle, but we're going to get to see him firsthand. He's an NBA player. He's going to be really, really good. LeGerald Vick, who declared for the draft and came back kind of awkwardly because Bill Self had kind of planned on moving on without him, and Vic was like, I changed my mind, can I come back? And it took some negotiation, but he's back. So Kansas is loaded, and so who knows, that game may not go well at all for Marquette, but who knows, maybe you catch the Jayhawks sleeping, maybe you can beat them on a neutral floor and get a huge non-conference win, and no matter how that goes, you're going to get another quality opponent in the next game, either Louisville or Tennessee, whether you win or lose, you're going to get one of those two teams. So I'm really excited for that preseason NIT, and boy, Marquette's first 2 or 3 weeks is really just kind of a gauntlet. Obviously, you got some games you're supposed to win with UMBC, Bethune-Cookman, and then Presbyterian. But to have Indiana, Kansas, and then either Louisville or Tennessee in your first that's six games.
Yep,
that is daunting.
Yeah, it's a tough ask, but that's the kind of thing you want to do when you've got an experienced, somewhat veteran team coming back, right? I mean, this is the type of challenge, like you said. It doesn't necessarily. I mean, you obviously got to win some of those high caliber games, right? You can't go 0-5, 0-6 against top 30 teams. So you got to win a couple of those. But it also, assuming you win a few, it also doesn't hurt you to lose to the number one team, because if nothing else, they're going to reward a little bit to, hey, you played some people.
Exactly.
So that's going to count. Now, what's going to be interesting, we haven't talked about it at all, is this new NCAA analytic. That seems to be a black box that hasn't been revealed, and they're not showing any data. And I could, the day job starts to come in there, and I could go into a conniption fit about the whatever the NCAA is doing there. But
the net, they're calling it
net, and RPI is dead, which is fine. But when you replace it with a black box, that's not great. So it'll be interesting to see how, from a data standpoint, this works out. But from the eye test, so to speak, there's no downside. And it makes for some exciting basketball, right? I mean, you want to come at the king every once in a while.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you want to play good teams. Like I said, if you beat Kansas, that's a program win.
Right.
That would be the most significant win in Wojo's tenure, probably even more than beating Villanova.
I was just going to ask, does beating Villanova, is that more significant or less than Kansas? I think the Kansas win's bigger.
Well, yeah, the thing is, you wouldn't have the emotion because you wouldn't have the fans storming the court. At least you shouldn't in Brooklyn. But yeah, I mean, if Kansas comes into that game number one in the country and you beat them on a neutral floor, hell yeah, that's noteworthy. That is significant. But let's hope they can maybe beat Indiana first. And I look at it like maybe about six games between Indiana, Kansas, the second NIT game, Kansas State, Wisconsin, and I'll throw Buffalo in there. So like six games, those are basically the if you got to win four of them, I think, to have a really, really good non-conference resume. And if you get three, it's probably okay, as long as you can have a great Big East schedule. But, you don't want to go 2-4, which is possible. Like, if you go to Indiana and lose, you go 0-2 in Brooklyn, then you definitely got to – you got to beat Buffalo, and then you'd have to beat one of, Kansas State and Wisconsin, Kansas State could get you at home, I suppose. Kansas State's really good. Well, you just never want to lose to Wisconsin, even though you got to recognize it's always possible. But, yeah, I mean, I would set the minimum expectation for me if you want to be a – tournament team is you got to get three out of those six, and you get four, I'd be feeling great as you go into Big East play. And a lot of preseason prognosticators, without getting too deep into them, have Marquette pick most of them about second in the Big East right now. So there are certainly some expectations there, which is exciting. But getting back to the thing you mentioned about the net, again, I probably don't want to go too deep into it, Phil, but the one thing that I will say about it that I found a little interesting is the margin of victory metric that they're going to bring into it, which I guess matters, up to with a cap of 10 points. Yeah, what's interesting to me about that is, I'll be interested, in, late game situations where, say the game's over and you're, up 7 with 10 seconds left and you're just dribbling out the clock. If somebody hoists a 3 to get to that 10-point plateau and, it matters just to get those extra points as opposed to just, dribbling out the clock, doing the sportsmanship thing, I'll be interested to see if, people like teams go for that last extra point to like, oh, we got to get a margin of victory of 8 instead of 6. I mean, come on, we got to get let's get those extra 2 points as the clock runs out. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about the margin of victory cap at 10. Maybe it matters, maybe it doesn't, but I want to see it in action, right? Like, it's hard for me to like really it's hard for me to really say how I feel about it. I just want to see how it affects the teams that I think are really good or the teams I think that are really bad, teams that I think are overrated, and of course how it affects Marquette. So I guess I want to see it in action before I make a really good judgment on it, but yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I agree with you, because that's the thing is, like, we've got a number of, you know, you got KenPom and Sagarin and a number of, you know, kind of advanced analytics, you know, kind of the sabermetrics of college basketball. So whatever this spits out, you're going to have something to compare it to. But we got to figure out how much of this stuff is really impactful. Because, I mean, the other thing is, you know, if you're up 15 or 16 with a minute to go, The other way to look at, are you putting in your scrubs? Are you going to play the walk-ons? Because, you know, if it moves the needle, you got
to – Yeah, you don't want to slip it to 9, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, who knows? That is an interesting point. Somebody will have to keep an eye on that, because I'm probably not going to pay that close attention to it. But I will wonder how much the coaches care, I guess. Like, how – like, you know, that would probably be a job for an assistant coach, be like – so we're up X amount of points. There's X amount of time left. It's probably safe to put in the walk-ons, or right now it's, well, you got to leave your guys out there. Hey, tell Marcus to fire up a 3 here as the clock's winding down. Let's get it to 10. All right, and stuff like that. You know, I'll be interested to see how coaches handle that. But who knows? Maybe it's nothing, but maybe they care a lot, because the coaches know about this stuff. They're not, you know, I guarantee, like, coaches across the country are looking into this net thing and say, all right, what matters, what doesn't, and how is it going to affect maybe the way we handle game situations, end of game situations. And so all these coaches, all these, athletic staffs, you know, they've all got somebody studying this stuff to make sure, you know, they're up to par on it, and they know what they're doing when it comes to trying to get the best possible resume to get into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, just the last point I'll make, is long-term, I'll be very curious to see how it impacts scheduling, right? I mean, there's no doubt that RPI and, you know, we've spent on this podcast the last 3 or 4 years debating, or not even debating, but demanding that they eliminate the number of 300-plus RPI teams on the schedule and try and jam as many 200 to 209 RPI 299 RPI teams on the non-conference schedule. So what does this net do for scheduling in the outgoing years? You know, does it encourage teams to schedule more stronger competition or less strong competition? How does that going to impact a lot of eyeballs and a lot of revenue?
Yeah, that's something that I'm sure somebody, and I feel bad for these people, but they may be studying past seasons, right?
Right.
Say, all right, let's take this net metric and apply it to 2016 and see what it spits out. Say, oh, well, this team, which would have been terrible for our schedule under the RPI, actually would have been good for our schedule under the net. Or maybe it's the same difference. I don't know, but some poor sap in every athletic department is probably studying this stuff right now and trying to get the coaches and the athletic directors and the schedule makers say, hey, look, all right, so these schools do they're better for us with the net, so we should be okay scheduling them. Or say these schools would just really kill us with this net now, so we can't schedule these guys anymore. So, yeah, those are, I'm sure, conversations that are going on across the country in many athletic departments, including Marquette's.
Absolutely. So time will tell. We'll see. But we got this season ahead of us. Turns out you got to go win games.
Absolutely. So, and I think Marquette's a good position to do so. But you know, this was a relatively short podcast. We're going to go too deep into scheduling previews or anything like that, because I still think we got another month for that. And maybe after Marquette Madness and hopefully a Nico Mannion commitment, we can maybe get deeper into that. Right. That I think that'll be the next podcast like bell that goes off, is if Mannion makes a decision. Because now that he's down to 2, I'd be surprised if he waits until like January to make an announcement. Like, I mean, if, you know, it'd be one thing if he still had Duke in the mix and was going to take an official visit to Duke and probably go to a Duke Carolina game and do all that stuff and do the big visit. But, you know, if he's going to Marquette for Marquette Madness and he's going to go to Arizona for their Midnight Madness deal, I'd be surprised if he waits until the spring to sign. I would almost guess that he's going to sign in the early signing period and go ahead and get it out of the way. And because, like I said, if you're down to two, I mean, you've probably weighed all the pros and cons of all of them. You just want to see everything up close, talk with the family, and say, all right, this is it. So that's the main thing recruiting-wise we're just kind of keeping an eye on over the next few weeks. But, yeah, so that's one thing to keep an eye on. As always, we appreciate you listening here on Scrambled Eggs. Feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions, comments, feedback. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can hit us up on Facebook. There's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. You can go to Apple Podcasts, rate us and review us. Appreciate the 5 stars, quality comments. Those are always helpful. And yeah, I think that's everything. I think it's touching everything.
Yeah, I think
shaking the rust off. Phil, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Well, I've got a month to fire the current engineer and get a new engineer. But yeah, I think we'll pull it all together just in time for Marquette Madness.
We will be in midseason form soon enough, but until then, seashells and balloons, everybody.